You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com.
So welcome, everybody. I'm Nadira Jamal, the Belly Dance Geek, and welcome to episode 35 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. Wow. This episode is sponsored by Susan Hugert, who is hosting an evening of music and dance featuring dancer Tiffany Adia and vintage belly dance rock band Ishtar. If you'd like to join them for this fabulous event on Saturday, November 14th in Charleston, West Virginia, visit SusanHugertHipCurve.com. That's SusanHugertHipCurve.com. And if that's a little bit tricky to spell after listening, that's also linked from the show page. The Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse is a place where dancers can get together and geek out on all of those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want to get help with the what, so things like moves and combinations and choreographies, there are a lot of resources out there. But it can be a little bit trickier to get help with the why and the how. So if you want to learn about musicality, culture, business, professionalism, that can be a little bit tricky. So every month I interview a different guest expert on a different geeky topic, and we always have time for question and answer so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, you are in the right place. My guest tonight is Kay Hardy Campbell. Kay has had a lifelong fascination for the culture of Saudi Arabia and its Gulf neighbors. She learned the women's dances while living in Saudi Arabia and teaches those dances around the U.S. at workshops. She also writes articles for publications like Aramco World Magazine as she continues to research and write about music and dance of the Arabian Peninsula. She also plays the oud and violin and helps direct the Arabic Music Retreat. You can check her out at kayhardycampbell.com, spelled kayhardycampbell.com. And tonight, Kay is going to talk to us about Kalenji dance. And for those of you who are listening to this in front of a computer or maybe even your phone, she's prepared a YouTube playlist that she's going to refer to throughout this. You don't need to be able to watch the videos immediately, but it is handy to know what she's going to be referring to. So the easiest way to get there is to go to bit.ly, which is bit.ly/KAYHC. So it's short for Kay Hardy Campbell. So one more time, that's bit.ly/KAYHC. And that's also linked from the show notes. If that's easier to get to, you'll find that just below the You'll Learn section. All right, so let's jump in. Welcome, Kay.
Oh, well, thank you, Nadira. I'm so excited to be here, and thanks for the invitation.
My pleasure. For those of you who weren't listening in a little bit earlier before we got started, I've taken several workshops with Kay, and I'm just thrilled with everything I've learned. So I'm really thrilled to have you.
Oh, thank you so much.
So tell us how you got started in music and dance.
Well, I was lucky enough to be born into a very musical family, and all of us were required to play instruments. So I started at about the age of 5 on piano and went through several, many, many instruments over the years. I started playing the oud in 1990 and went on to get very, very involved in Arabic music after that. And I've gone back to, I've been working on Arabic violin, and I also play percussion. And, you know, music has always been a big part of my life. And as far as dance is concerned, I studied, you know, as a child, ballet, contemporary dance, and I took my first Oriental dance class in the 1970s. At university, but my biggest influence in that world was Cassandra of Minneapolis, who's a dear friend, and she is extremely musical as a dancer, and because of that love for the music, as I had as well, because I started studying Arabic and had gotten deep into Arabic music, I really learned the most, I think, from her of my Oriental dance teachers.
And tell us about your time in Saudi Arabia.
So after my husband and I, he's my fellow Arabic student, he and I got married and went off to Saudi Arabia to work in the late 70s. When we got there, I learned about these women's dances and was lucky enough to be invited to some weddings, and I also made friends with some Saudi women who showed me how to do some of the dances. And that's how I learned the Khaliji style, and I was just fascinated with it partly because I knew it was unknown really outside, and I was just curious to explore and see what this kind of hidden treasure of a dance was. Mm-hmm. And oh, also, that's when I started to write. I began writing. I was a trailing spouse over there. My husband was the one with the official work permit, so anything I did was unofficial, and had the great chance to start writing for the local English language press, and that taught me a lot of writing skills.
Wonderful. And before we jump in, can you tell us a little bit more about just what Khaliji means?
Yes, the word Khaliji means of the Gulf. So there, you can say Khaliji food, Khaliji dress, Khaliji fashion, Khaliji pop music, Khaliji weather, and we stick that name on a dance, but it has a very specific meaning in this part of the world. When we say Khaliji, we're talking about usually the women's social dances that we either portray on the stage or that you see at a nightclub, where there are a lot of Gulf people, and the guys are doing the same thing. It's like sort of pop music dances. But the word itself applies to everything that has to do with the Gulf. It's like Egyptian music, Egyptian food, Egyptian film. Same kind of deal. That's what Khaliji means.
Gotcha.
I hope that makes
sense.
And
what countries are we usually thinking about? What countries would be covered under that umbrella?
Okay, in terms of culture in general, it would be all the little countries of the Arabian Gulf, and that would be Bahrain, Kuwait, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Oman, and parts of southern Iraq and the eastern and Saudi Arabia, because it has a coastline on the Gulf as well. And for the dance, when we're studying and performing this so-called Khaliji dance, which is kind of a socialized sort of choreographed version of their social dances, that's from Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, UAE a little bit, and Saudi Arabia.
And what are some of the ethnic groups that live there that tend to participate in this dance?
Well, that's a really big topic and great question. Primarily Arabs, but there are many immigrants in the Gulf, including Africans, people from the Indian subcontinents, Asians farther east, and even Persians. And all those groups have various amounts of influence on the many, many folk dances that you find in that region. And also there is Iraqi influence. But in terms of the ethnic groups that actually live there, it's not a homogenous society. It's pretty mixed.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've mentioned that when we talk about Khaliji dance from a belly dancer perspective, we're really talking about one specific type of social dancing. And you said that men and women do this. Is this something that's done, pretty broadly across the board, or is it more likely to happen in some subsections of the culture versus others?
Well, social dancing at weddings and other occasions, celebratory occasions, is common throughout the area. But it also takes the form of specific traditional folk dances. So, and those have different names. But what we usually see, the Khaliji, what we're putting on the stage and what we kind of study here, it's a pair or a group dance. And yes, it's done through all those countries, but there are also, and a lot of the older traditions are not done so much anymore, but some people do them. There's a whole bunch of them that go by specific different names. They have maybe different costumes, specific music and costumes that go with them. It's very much like Egyptian dance. So if someone said to you, oh, you study Egyptian dance, that is a huge umbrella term. It takes in everything from Saidi to Cain to, the Hagala, all the varieties of traditional folk dance. And yet you've also got Shabi, which I guess you could say is modern Egyptian pop dance. And that's maybe the parallel to what we see as Khaliji today in the nightclubs. and kind of what we're putting on the stage. So there are many, many, many different types. Men and women do them. As far as the folk traditions, in fact, a lot of them, men and women do them, but separately. I've learned that in recent years. I, for a long time, had this conception that there were certain dances, that most of the dances were divided by gender, but I have learned that, nope, the women do a lot of the same dances, except we never see them because of, you know, though their women are usually not traditional performers, so they, you don't see them very much in film or live performance.
So to make sure I understand correctly, you were saying that both men and women do the same dances, but not together.
Most of the dances are done by both, or they were. You know, the more esoteric folk dances that are no longer done, those are kind of gone. But whatever traditions are out there, people are doing, they are the province of both men and women. And in Saudi Arabia, they do them separately. In some places, they mix together. So, you know, I have stopped saying, unless I know for sure, that this dance is a men's dance or a women's dance, because I've been told by natives that, you know what, the women do this too. In fact, they do it better than the men. And I was absolutely shocked to hear that. So I've stopped, until I know for sure, I'm just going to assume it may be both, and most of the time it's separate. I'm going to say that.
Great. And what are some of the common features or aesthetics of this dance?
Okay, now when I answer that question, I guess I'm going to talk about the what we call the social dancing, the Khaliji dance that we try and stage all the time here in the West, okay? So I'm not talking about all the different varieties of folk dance, all right, when I answer that question. Mostly it's done in a group or in pairs. And there's subtle, if any, hip movements. Of course, we all know the ubiquitous movement is the specific sort of style of the tossing of the hair, a naish, some people call it. That is very kind of a signatory movement of this so-called Khaliji dance. Smaller steps. They're not huge traveling steps, although some forms they do move quickly across the stage. And costume plays into it. If you're holding a thobe, we'll talk more about the thobe later, but the thobe plays a huge role because it's such a huge garment that you have to dance in a certain way. And it's usually in, I think you're going to ask me, is it ever done well, no, let's get back to this question. I think that's pretty much it. There's a special energy that would vary depending on the rhythm. If it's a really fast 6-8, obviously the movements are going to be really fast and small. If it's a very slow 3-4 or a slow 4-4, you can take your time and be a bit more languid. One thing I would say is that the carriage of the dancers, there's a lot of pride and they carry themselves very straight and tall, so that you see really strong shoulders and, you know, especially when they're dancing in a line, in a group, it's a strong, unified look.
And can you tell us about the types of music that are used for this dance?
Well, it's a huge ocean of music. There's a whole range of types. You've got pop music, big orchestra, like neoclassical sounds, and then many, many genres and flavors and varieties of folk music ensembles. And it's so hard to characterize it other than they do tend to use certain rhythms that are known to come from the Gulf. Right now, a very popular rhythm is called Khubaiti, which comes from Saudi Arabia. And there's an Iraqi 4-4 and an Adani 4-4. These are very, very popular right now. But it's very complicated what the rhythms are. It's like there's a whole family of rhythms, just like there is in Rakhsharti, the same complexity, the same number of rhythms. You know what I mean? The same variety. You have the same in the whole, in the music of the Gulf world.
Absolutely. And I think so many of us, when we learn Khaliji in a belly dance class, only learn the doom, doom, kiteka, doom, doom, kiteka. And there's so much more out there.
Yes, and it's partly because we didn't have a lot of material to work with at first. And now we've got a lot more music. So we're hearing it a lot, and over there things are really hopping as well, and they're experimenting with different types of music, as different rhythms as well.
Mm-hmm. And do you know of any good rhythm resources for a more Gulf style?
Yes, there's a fantastic book that's just come out, and it's by Dr. Lisa Urkovich, and the title of it is, hold on a second. It came out on Routledge. You can buy it on Amazon. Her last name is spelled Urkovich, Urkevich. The title of the book, Music and Traditions of the Arabian Peninsula. And it includes descriptions of dances at women's weddings of all kinds, and it comes with a great CD. She has a lot of charts of rhythms as well. And even if you type in, if someone's really interested in this, email me and I can send you a link. There's a whole series of YouTubes of some person just playing some of these rhythms on YouTube. It's kind of interesting. This has come out in the last year or so.
Great. Why don't I get that from you after the call, and I'll make sure that gets into the show notes.
Okay.
Excellent. Great. I'm so glad I asked that.
Yes, good question.
All right, so we've talked rhythms and we've talked genres a little bit. Are there any particular singers or songs that would be particularly helpful for people to start listening to?
Well, that's a huge question. People ask this all the time. I really like the singer Balqis right now. She's one of my favorites. She's from the United Arab Emirates, and she loves to mix the modern pop with some of the traditional rhythms. She's very popular. And her name is spelled B as in boy, Alqees. You can just YouTube her, and you'll find a lot of her songs. Another big pop star, Majid Mohandas, is very popular. Faisal al-Rashid, Rashid al-Majid. There's a singer, Asma, Hussein al-Jasmi. All these are big pop stars that are modern, who are doing the modern Khaliji sound, which is, you know, what you're going to hear in a nightclub. If you go to a nightclub where people are dancing Khaliji style, you know, those are some of the names you'd hear.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that we've worked with a little bit in one of your workshops, and I've also seen in some of your YouTube clips, is this kind of group clapping method. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yes. It's called tasfiq, and you clap. It's a way of making a hollow sound with your clapping, and they use it as a syncopated rhythm, and there's literally a whole like rhythm section of clappers in a live performance of traditional Gulf music, and they use it in pop music as well. And what I like to, often if you see dancers who are performing, a pair of dancers who are performing to a live audience and there's a bunch of clappers, when they start up, the girls do a little shimmy movement that I like to call kahraba, because it's like just the tiniest little shimmer as they continue dancing as a way of kind of reacting to the clapping.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed doing that just for the participation aspect, like, you know, just kind of being involved in this very complex rhythm as part of a group was really fun. So if anybody ever has the opportunity to do that in person, I highly recommend it.
Oh, learn how to do the clapping pattern, mm-hmm. You mean? Yes, it's tough to learn, and they have, when they do it, when they have a session with clappers, they'll have one person who's kind of the leader of the clappers, who starts them and then ends it, and there are many, many different patterns of syncopation. It's fun to listen to it. If you like to geek out on rhythm, those clapping patterns are quite fascinating.
And is there anything else you want to tell us about the music before we move on to more questions?
Oh, I could go on for days. I think it's really exciting that there's a whole generation of new Saudi singers Saudi female singers who are coming to the fore. And my favorite one is, let me see if I can remember her name, Bint Alhan Bint Salim, really great singer. And if you just keep your ears open, you'll see, if you get into this YouTube loop and you start looking and listening, you'll find her. She's just a delightful voice. And Balqis is just great. She has such a wonderful spirit. I do want to mention on the YouTube clips, I think it's the last, one of the last clips is a piece by her called Mabruk. a latest video that's very, very popular in the region right now. And I got that clip courtesy of Mark Balahadia out of New York. And it's an actual, it's Balkis is the singer, and she's performing in a women's party for where they're celebrating a marriage. But in the, they also keep flipping back to the men's side of the party, because in Saudi Arabia, men and women separate, they celebrate the wedding separately. And the men's side, they actually have a professional folk troupe. They're doing all the different folk dances and all the different outfits, but the women are like in the salon, and they do a little bit of dancing. You can just get a little snippet of it, and Balkis herself is a great dancer. So it's really fun to watch, and it's actually filmed in a real Saudi family. Kind of controversial, but extremely popular. My theory is one of these days, someone's finally going to film the actual women's wedding party, and we'll finally get to see these dances. But until then, it's as if we have to imagine and use whatever resources we can to understand what the steps are that they're doing in those very private events, because we really don't have any footage of a real Saudi women's wedding party or a Kuwaiti women's wedding party or a Bahraini women's party, because those are really still private events.
All right. And I took a look at the playlist, and that is number 12. So if there's anybody who wants to dig in there, just head over to number 12, and it begins, the title begins with Balkis, so you'll find
it easily. She starts out doing a beautiful improvisation that's wishing the bridal couple well, and then it flips right into footage of the actual party for the bride and her mom and all her friends. It's actually wonderful.
Mm. Excellent. So let's talk a little bit more about the cultural context of the dance. So, you know, we've talked about weddings. Are there any other contexts in which this tends to be done?
Yes, it would be done these days for National Day celebrations, especially in Kuwait. Kuwait is a big proponent of these large choreographed live performances that get broadcast on TV throughout the region. They've been doing it since the 70s. And they have beautiful costumes, elaborate choreographies, and live orchestras. I put a couple of those on the YouTube playlist as well. So you can see those very formal performances, and they're quite spectacular. Over the years, they get more elaborate. Sometimes they have little girls. Sometimes they have adults. My favorite was the 2014 one because the costumes are really, really interesting. They get a little bit fusion-y with their thob nashals, and they got the guys involved. There are men and women dancing on the stage together at some points. But the some of the earlier ones, I think I have them from the 70s. You should check those out as well. I have one, I think it's number 9, is a Kuwaiti salute to Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this dance that's written. It says it's the Nakazi dance. I showed this clip to a conference over in Abu Dhabi just to talk to them. I was talking about how researching the women's dances is a big challenge right now, and YouTube presents a lot of challenges and opportunities. I showed them this clip. Nobody in the room had ever heard of this dance, and they were shocked. Their attitude was, oh, they just made it up. It's all a choreographer's whim. And it's really fun. You watch this clip and the women are actually jumping across the stage. The costumes are great. They're very traditionally inspired. I have no idea if those steps are authentic or not. I'm trying to find out, but haven't been able to confirm it. Anyway, this just gives you an example, though, of how elaborate and fancy some of these National Day performances are. Also, people will put these kind of presentations on in their schools, and those are not public, of course. You see, then there are people who actually phone, they film with their iPhones, their little kids performing in these school pageants, and then they put them up on YouTube. I don't think they realize that all of us are watching over here. Fascinating stuff.
All right. Now, stepping back to the National Day events, Are these like professional folk troupes or professional performers, or do they just, bring in folks who are good dancers, just
No,
in their
they are
social
not
life?
professional dancers. They're mostly school kids. They're from the schools.
Hmm.
So, like, they're probably secondary school. Some years in Kuwait, they were doing them only with, like, elementary school age kids. And some years, they're high school kids. So they're not going to be even college age. They're going to be high school age. And they're going to be trained by the schools. Perhaps professional choreographers, definitely professional costumes. But they're not professional dancers.
All right, and
Why
that
is that?
didn't.
It's because Gulf women, I do not know of any women from a Arab Gulf country who performs this dance publicly. I wish there were, and I wish they would be teaching it, but they aren't. It's just still too taboo.
So
And
you're
that's
stepping
why
back.
people like me are teaching it, because there's no one else. I mean, we're kind of filling a gap, really.
So stepping back to, just social occasions, we've talked about weddings. Are there any other common like types of parties or gatherings where this would be done? Or is it, one of my like Oriental dance metaphors I like to tell people about is like, if your cousin came over, you might put on Spotify and get up and dance.
Oh, sure, same thing. Yes, just informal stuff in the house. If you're celebrating anything, sure. Whenever the girls get together and they want to dance, sort of a girls' night in type of thing, for sure. They do have parties like that. And remember, there's the henna night too. The weddings are elaborate multi-night affairs, and sometimes there's a lot more dancing that's done on the night of the henna when the bride's hands and feet are decorated, and sometimes it's on the night of when the bride and groom come together as husband and wife, the actual wedding night. And then there's, there might be an engagement party. Boy, it's just whenever someone wants to have a party and hire the musicians. In Saudi Arabia, they might hire female musicians to come in and perform live, or they might just hire a DJ, a female DJ or a male DJ, or just throw stuff in the CD or the Spotify or whatever they're using and dance to recorded music.
Now, we've talked about how, this isn't really a solo dance. So you said that it can be done in groups or in pairs. How big do these groups get sometimes?
Well, if you, like 50?
Wow.
I mean, you look at some of the stage numbers that you have on the stage, the Kuwaitis that they do, it's a lot of people. It's quite a group. On the playlist, you'll see there are a couple that have a couple dozen at least. But, you can get away with, pair dancing. You've got that on the playlist as well. That's a tradition as well. If you can have two or three or four, and the sky's the limit after that. Look at the 2014 Kuwaiti National Day clip. I mean, they're at the end, the finale, I think there's like 200 people on the stage.
And when this is being done in a more, casual social setting where you aren't likely to have a choreography, how do the groups interact with each other? Are there leaders or followers, or does everybody do their own thing?
Well, it's both. Sometimes, I would say, they're all going to be interacting kind of like we would do if we got up to just groove to, whatever music we wanted to be listening to. I think we just sort of do it naturally, and it's the same over there. You definitely make eye contact, and you have a good time with it. Most of the time, you're not just sort of a lone ranger. You're going to be looking at someone. There's eye contact. You might be following each other. You might not. You might just kind of echo a movement and then move on. If you look at that Balkis video on the playlist, you can see a little bit of that going on with the women who are dancing. There's very little shown, and most of it's Balkis herself who's trying to, because she's not a Saudi and she's not a member of that family, she can dance a little bit more. She's a performer after all, and so she's kind of trying to get them going. there's a couple of clips where you moments where you can see that she's actually dancing with someone. So have a look at that real closely, and you can get a sense of how they interact.
Okay, one more time, everybody. That was number 12 on the playlist, if you want to take a look. Great. You know, and so considering that often a lot of us Oriental dancers are doing solo shows or, you know, more formal presentations outside of this, you know, social dance context, do you have any tips on how to adapt it to a performance setting?
Right. Well, take a cue from these National Day performances. And what I would say to that is simplify your choreography. Try not to make it look like a line of cheerleaders. Keep your stance really proud and make the movements smaller, because when you've got these incredibly gorgeous thobes and you're all like 6, 8, 10 of you in a row, the smaller the movement, the more interesting it is to watch, really, I think. And, you, of course, you can vary the intensity and the sort of volume and the magnitude of your movement. But the more subtle, it looks pretty great, actually. And don't be too complicated. But, yeah, I think that would pretty much cover it. I think that would help. And The whole issue of dancing in the thobe, it takes on such a huge dimension. It's really important to think about that.
Great. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. Okay.
So first off, for people who don't know what the thobe is, can you explain it?
Yes. The thobe is the square, large square overdress. It's almost like a long, full-length poncho that drags on the ground behind. Thobe means dress or garment in Arabic, and the Khaliji thobe is a term that we use, the Gulf thobe, for these dresses. They go by many names, and the most famous one is thobe an-nashal, and that's the most elaborate, sort of dripping with gold embroidery and sequins that we all covet and love. And when you dance with that, you are echoing not only how they do it when they're doing sort of a National Day presentation or a ceremonial celebration, but you're also echoing how in the past people used to social dance with those thobes. If you look at clip number, an example of that is clip number 1 on the playlist, which shows a pair of women dancing in a Gulf. They've got their thobes on, and they're dancing in a salon or a majlis where everyone's sitting on the edges of the room on the floor. And they've got their thobes going. And also number 7 is one of my absolute favorites, which is another pair of women who are excellent dancers. I believe they're a mother and daughter, and you can see how they dance together. This is the pair dancing aesthetic. I think these two really have it in spades, the women in number 7. And they, you'll see how they're dancing with the thobe as well as in it. And they don't swing it too much. It's just they're draped in it, and they lift it up, you know, with one arm, and they're not swinging it. If they do make moves with it, it's a really hard aesthetic to explain, but they are they're not whipping it around. They're just, it's like, it to them, it's a ceremonial gown, and it's kind of a precious thing. So you have to kind of respect it. I guess that's how I would characterize it in my current thinking.
Mm-hmm. And this is usually worn over just regular party clothes, is that right?
Yes. Well, in the old days, traditionally, they would wear it over a full-length dress with long sleeves that goes by many, many different names throughout the Gulf, from dishdasha to mikta and dira. Nafnuf, there are all these different names for the various, and kandura is another word for the underdress that goes under it, and then underneath that would be pantaloons, okay? So the thobe itself is just one layer of the traditional dress. In a social context 50, 60 years ago, yes, they would just put the thobe on top of their party clothes, and if you were going to perform it today, I always advise troops and groups to wear like an underdress, which would be a full-length gown with long sleeves, and a simple cut gown like that.
And what's the role of the thobe today?
Right, so it goes in cycles. Actually, I'm writing an article about the thobe right now, and I've learned that it, in some years, you know, for decades, it will be out of favor, and then suddenly it will come back in. And at the moment, there's a bit of a revival going on, particularly in Qatar, where it's apparently increasing in popularity. There's a great deal of interest in returning, you know, to the heritage roots, but they're not necessarily wearing it to dance. So in dance, the girls are probably less likely to wear them at a wedding party because they are showing off their ball gowns that they have, you know, strategized about and bought and gotten all coiffed and ready to go to these formal wedding parties. However, I have heard that some places the girls are returning to wearing the thobes at henna parties for the fun of it.
Mm. And so, you know, if we're looking at this, you know, from a performance perspective, you did recommend wearing the thobe. Is there a particular reason for that, just for the reference or the movement vocabulary or another reason?
Yeah, that is part of it. It is really more fun to dance it with the thobe because you have all the options of, you know, putting the sleeve on your head and moving with the thobe. And in fact, it's a representation. It refers back to the more traditional style. It's like, you know, okay, in the night, maybe in the villages of Egypt, the girls don't wear a gawazi outfit anymore when they're doing, you know, XYZ dance. But if you're doing gawazi dance, you want to wear the costume. And I kind of feel like for the Khaliji dance, if you're going to do like a formal choreographed piece, you can do the thobe, but just because girls right now in certain big cities in Saudi don't want to do it, or they don't in certain regions, it's still considered part of the national dress of these countries, and they would use it in their own school presentations, or like Kuwait National Day, they still use them in performance. So I think one is totally justified in doing that. On the other hand, if you want to do it with, you want to perform without a thobe, go for it. Have them wearing party clothes. Have your dancers wearing formal party clothes. In that way, you can use your hips more. All the movements that are being borrowed in the social dance from, say, Iraq or Egypt or even the West, you can play around with those movements as well. And that way, the audience can see the body. The other idea is to wear a real thin tulle or netting type of thobe over long gowns, so you could kind of play both sides. You could show the thobe movements and yet show the underlying body if you wanted to do that for fun.
That's a good idea. All right. And, you know, the Gulf is actually a pretty big region geographically. Does the dance vary a lot from area to area?
Yes, they do. I guess what I would say is if you're looking for this sort of modern, semi sort of late 20th century, early 21st century style of social dance that we like to put on the stage, you're going to find that in Kuwait, Bahrain, Eastern Saudi Arabia, parts of the UAE, and parts of Qatar. But aside from that, all the underlying folk dances are very, very different. And today, you know, Aisha Azar, who's one of the great experts in the Khaliji, she has a very close Saudi friend from Riyadh, and the two of them, her Riyadi friend, taught her the style of dance that the girls do in Riyadh. And she's kind of gotten a specialty going in that, and she does a great job of explaining what the girls in Riyadh do or were doing a few years ago. I mean, who knows? I mean, it changes all the time. Like all social dances, it's constantly changing and morphing, so it's very hard to say exactly who's doing what in which city and what time. It's kind of like, I don't know, I was a child of the 60s. Social dancing in those days in our own country was constantly changing. There were fads that would come and go, and that's kind of the same with Khaliji. However, there are, you know, the standard movements that do kind of obtain. But on top of that, you might see variations from city to city.
Great. You know, and for Western dancers, what are some of the challenges of learning this dance?
Oh, boy. I think the hardest thing is that you cannot see it performed by natives live. And there is no, you can, but you can't see it done in a sort of formal choreographed setting that we as dancers would want to see. You know, you have to go watch people in a nightclub, you know, in New York or Boston or LA or wherever, and just observe what they're doing and think about how you would get that onto the stage. You know, take notes. You can't really film because people will be upset if you film them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to use YouTube. You need to take as many workshops as you can. I also really, really advise everybody who's interested in this topic to join the fantastic Facebook group that was put together by Leila Molai and Mark Bala Hadia. And the name of that group is, I highly advise you join it because you can learn so much there. There are over 2,500 members now, and people post YouTubes all the time in there, and we're always discussing what's going on in the news and the trends in dances of the area. It's called Dances of the Arabian Peninsula, Iraq, and Southern Iran. So you should definitely join that Facebook group. So that's the biggest challenge, I think, is that there's so little material that's, you know, easily found and used. There are a handful of people who love this style of dance and teach it. I mean, I'm happy to mention them. I recommend any of these guys for workshops. So Leila Boulay in the UK, Mark Bala Hadia, New York, Latifa in Maryland, Khadija, Colorado, Cassandra in Minnesota, Aisha Azar in Spokane, Amani Jibril, Augusta, Georgia, and Irina Bolopolskaya in Moscow. Those are the ones I know. If I'm forgetting anyone, sorry, but there's a whole group of us that are just kind of fascinated by the dances. And if you can hook up with a workshop or get in touch with them, take a class, that's also a really good resource.
Mm-hmm. And are there any other resources that you recommend specifically? I know we had that great music and dance book and CD set.
Right. Well, get on YouTube. And I think that, you know, it has a lot of limitations, but that's probably it. Go to a nightclub if you know for sure. There's so many Saudi and Gulf foreign students in the U.S. right now and in London. If you can get to a nightclub and where they're playing Khaliji and just watch. Watch people get up and try the dances and just copy them. You can't film them, but take notes and copy. Try the dances right on the spot and just find out what the music is and learn that way.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that's tricky about YouTube is that sometimes it's really hard to tell what you're looking at. And sometimes it's really hard, especially when we're talking about things where the actual name of it might be in Arabic, sometimes it's hard to find examples of what you're looking for. Do you have any recommendations around that?
Well, the best thing I can tell you is, again, that Facebook group is really great because people post videos all the time and say, what is this? And we can usually figure out what it is. I have to say, Sahara Kent, who's an expert in Egyptian dance, she and I were emailing me and back and forth, and she wrote to me, really, YouTube is God's gift to dance researchers. And I would say I have to agree that what's become online in the last 5, 6, 7 years is beyond astounding. People are posting old archival footage from the 60s to the 90s, really rare stuff. And these are people from the region, not Westerners. They're posting iPhone recordings of modern parties, all kinds of random footage. And as an example of that, I wanted to point out the clip number 6. It says adult performance from Jizan province, Saudi Arabia. Okay, so this is an example of a really amazing short video taken by someone's iPhone, and it's of a Saudi woman performing at some kind of festival in the southwest of Saudi Arabia, and she's demonstrating the dances of the Najran area in the Jizan province. Extremely unusual. She's wearing like a headdress of jasmine and a long, almost lei necklace of jasmine. And she's dancing in front of an audience of women. And it's a very specific rhythm from that particular region of Saudi Arabia. And she's got like a gauze shawl that she's wrapped around her shoulders. And the dance is very repetitive. It's a simple dance. But the fact that somebody actually filmed that and posted it and no one took it down is amazing to me. And it just shows you how powerful YouTube is. And if you're out there trolling like I do, you can come up with some great gems. So the pluses are there's a ton of material. You can and you should download it. If you see something that you know is great and you're like, oh my God, I have to study this later, do not wait for later. Get one of those download buttons on your YouTube. Download it to your computer and start saving them, because what happens is sometimes people complain, and particularly with women dancing, those clips disappear. So you want to make sure you grab it before it disappears. Then there's the confusing examples. Probably the most fascinating one recently is this video by Miriam Faris, who's a Lebanese pop singer. She's kind of like a Cher type performer. And I have her on the playlist too. I believe she's number 13, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this is an old Saudi folk song, Yasaria Habirini, that she's put on the latest rhythm to it, which is kind of tekadum, tekadum, that type of rhythm. She's wearing kind of an exaggerated costume. All her dancers are kind of stage versions of sobes. And then even the women are twirling rifles, which is actually almost a parody of the UAE men's rifle dance called the Ayala. And I'm sorry, the Yaula. And people are very confused about that video. They wonder if that's really traditional Khaliji. Is that authentic? And I have to explain, no, it's not authentic. The thing that's authentic is the song and the rhythm. Although the combination of the two is modern, the movements are like almost an exaggerated stage Broadway version of Khaliji, and the way they're done is also very kind of plodding, and it doesn't have a real Gulf feel, and yet the set is beautiful, the costumes are amazing. This is the kind of thing that you run into. These are not Khaliji women, they're Lebanese, so it's going to come out slightly different. Also, people post visual footage and they dub different music on it. So you can't really tell what's authentic. Is it the music or the dance? And then people from the area post things and they have no idea what they are. They misname them. And then the videos disappear. So again, if you like something, download it. And if you're curious about it, post it on that Facebook group I mentioned and see if any of us can tell you what it is.
Great. Now, you know, I'm looking at this playlist as you're describing these things, and there are so many great clips on here. So I wonder if we could spend a couple minutes just going through the list one by one and just give us a quick description of what's in each one and why it might be helpful to look at that.
Okay,
after the call.
Of the playlist?
Yep.
Okay, the first one is, I'm going to put my thing on mute so you don't hear the music as I go through it. This is a traditional majlis-type performance. A majlis is a salon. This is probably from the 70s. And I think this is a mother-daughter, the same mother-daughter that we'll see in a few minutes later. And they're dancing with their thobes, very much a pair dance, moving up and down the open space on the carpet. And notice how one of the dancers flips up the thobe onto her shoulders and the other one holds it, her sleeves long, and all the different moves they do, they kind of copy each other, but it's not real stiff. And notice they have a long dress underneath, and there's a bit of twirling. You can twirl both ways with the sob. So I really love that one because it really shows the pair dancing, and they're really good dancers. Mm-hmm. The next one, this is a samri. This is one of the traditional pair dances of Kuwait. It's also done in Saudi Arabia and Bahrain, but it's in a diwaniya, which is the big open arched colonnade. The women are sitting behind, and you can see the drummers are going. They've got the whole drum section, and there are the two women. You see the clappers on one side and the frame drummers on the other, and the women have the thobes draped over their heads as they dance up and down, and that's very typical of the samri style. And then they'll pop their sleeves off and toss their hair at some point. That's an old traditional style that gets morphed into the social dances. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Now we have, excuse me, I think I need to get a mint or something. But this is, the next one is, this is Audat al-Mahanna. This is a real oldie from Kuwaiti TV. This is from the 60s probably. Again, it's a mixed jalsa of men and women. And they're young girls dancing. And this is pre a lot of big oil wealth, so there's low production values. The women with the, how could I say it, the women who are performing are some very famous Kuwaiti women musicians of the time. So see how these girls are dancing in pairs. Their steps are very simple, but it's definitely not choreographed. Now, the next one. This is number, what number am I in? I think this is four. The stage, the red curtain rises. Do you see that one?
Is that the one by Zidane K?
Yes, this is my...
Okay, yep. That's number five. Okay,
no,
great.
No, I'm talking number four now.
Okay, great.
Number four, this is one of the performance tableaus that was done in Kuwait, and performance is circled around pearl diving traditions. And again, the girls are wearing the thobes, and they pretty soon, you see the village in the background. The idea is they're on the shore of the ocean, and I think they're singing about the ocean. There's a famous, famous song called Tob Tob Ya Bahar. It says, repent, repent, O sea, bring back my beloved from the pearl dive out in the ocean, because they used to stay out in the Gulf for months at a time. The men would be away. The singer there is a young Kuwaiti named Sana Al-Jazar, and and she was very famous. When she was young, she would sing for all these performances with orchestra and all the dancers. So these are choreographed numbers. As you run into this, it changes this particular performance. They do a little bit of the Hammari dance, which is where they lift the sleeves over their head and they bounce. They lean way over as if they're tossing their hair, but the sleeve is still on their hair. That's around 2 minutes. You see that? And then they get into, let me see where this is, Tob Tob Ya Bahar. It comes in at certain... towards the end, around 3 minutes, they start with that song. Famous song having to do with the pearl dive. Okay, next one. Number five. This is really interesting. Live broadcast of the contest for the Almurada folk dance that was done in Qatar in 2013. So there's a whole group of elementary and middle school girl teens who competed in the rendition of Almurada, which is a group dance done and choreographed along with poetry. And if you follow along, you could just jump through this. It goes on for more than an hour. They actually pick a winner at the end. And it's really fun to watch the different groups. At the end of each clip, each performance, each team's performance. They jump out of line and they do a little hair tossing and jumping around. But this is one of the real traditional folk dances that is done by women. And let me see, if you get up to, I'm trying to find out where's a good point to look. All I can see is fireworks. No, here we go. Yeah, if you jump up into about 25 minutes, you can see the amazing costumes that they are not wearing thobes. These are like the underdress type, you know, the actual straight dress underneath. And some of them are wearing decorations and necklaces of basil or woven into their hair. So you can get a sense of how one folk dance has actually been preserved, and they're trying to encourage it in the schools in terms of contests. Then I think I already mentioned this number six, which was a random video taken of a woman performing at a festival. And I downloaded that one because I was quite afraid it would disappear. So she's wearing green. Notice how she's got this gauze shawl draped around her, and her cap and her headdress is completely covered in jasmine blossoms. I know that is the bride costume from that region, is to have that kind of a headdress. Very fragrant. Okay, so number seven is a fabulous pair dance. Again, it's the same pair of dancers that are in the first video, but they're much finer. It's a more modern, a better quality film, let's say that. And the dancing is even better because the thobes are a little bit thinner, so you can kind of see what they're doing better. And there's some fantastic moves in this, some walking shimmies, and just pay attention to this video. You can learn a lot from this. The next one is an English documentary about the Ayala, which is a group dance that's done in the Gulf, in the UAE and Oman. And there's a brief moment when they have girls dancing. Women, the girls stand in a line and toss their hair back and forth. And what just peeves me about this is that they give an explanation of why the girls toss their hair, and I'll talk more about that later. Everyone seems to want to have a theory about why people do that movement, where I am always wondering why no one wants to know about the reason for people doing a hip drop or a head slide. We always feel we have to have an explanation of why people toss their hair. Okay, now we come to 1989. Here is the next, this is number nine clip. This is, if you move in, this particular clip is the one that I was told is the Nagazi, and it starts around 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. You can see the girls are jumping across the stage. I believe it may be legitimate. I just have to have someone confirm to me that this is not completely just made up. In any case, you can see how beautiful the costumes are. They've taken the different regional styles and made them into beautiful thobes for performance. I'm sorry, I'm just rambling on. I hope this is useful.
No, this is
great. If you go on to number 11, this is the performance of Badawi dance, which is something I always teach. It's a Bedouin tradition that they've put on for the stage, and you can see the girls. These are all, again, high school girls. They're jumping with their hair tosses, two or three at a time, in the middle of the line, and everyone else is waiting behind. So you can get a good sense of that. And the jewelry is unbelievable. So you can see all the different thobes and the subtlety of the types of hair tosses. You got figure eights and back and forth. Then here is number 11. This is actually an example of a school performance of group Khaliji dance, and they're using like modern pop music. These are little kids, boys and girls, and they're performing these dances. There's like 50 girls and a whole bunch of boys. It's not really traditional, but you know, it's little kids being trained to dance to their regional music. It's kind of fun. My favorite, probably by far, of all these in terms of bringing together all the modern concepts is number 12, which is Balqis singing Mabruk. And again, thanks to Mark Balahadia for this, for telling me about this. You have to wait for the ad to go through. And this is the video that is actually filmed in a Saudi home, and it shows both the women's side and the men's side. It's just absolutely marvelous. And Balqis is the singer, and you can see they're signing the book. Anyway, it's quite delightful. I hope you enjoy that. Aforementioned in number 13 is the Miriam Farris, Yasaria video. Everybody loves this music. I have taught this many a time, and it's a very fun piece to dance to, this rendition of an old song. But her choreography, I think, is a little bit fanciful, and it just shows how it's a bit confusing to people. They don't know if this is legitimate or not. And then last but not least is the 2014 high-definition version of the Kuwait National Day Operetta. Again, you have to wait for the ad to go. And you can zoom through it and see to the extent of which they go to present these beautiful complex tableaus of dance. And they're saluting the neighboring countries. You'll see Bahrain, they're in red and white. Probably my favorite is the salute to the United Arab Emirates, where the girls are wearing kind of a modern fusion-style thobe with ruffly little colored pantaloons, full-length pantaloons, and they're kind of the front of the thobe national is cut off at the waist. It's very cool. So that's kind of a fun thing to watch. So that's what I picked for you. There's so much out there. Again, you know, start looking, and if you have questions, either post it on that Facebook page or send me an email. I'm happy to help you solve a mystery of a clip if you need that.
Thank you, Kay. That is such a great resource. I think I'm going to have to go back and like listen to your description and then pause the recording and go and watch the video and listen to the description again and watch it again and work my way through. So
great.
There's so much useful stuff in there.
Good.
All right. So we're going to take questions and answers pretty soon. I have just a couple more questions for Kay. But for folks who are on the call, go ahead and start thinking about what questions you'd like to ask. And if you are on the webcast, so if you're looking at Uber conference dashboard, you can actually type the question as well. There's a little question bubble button on the right, and that will pop out an area where you can type in your messages. So, Kay, if people take one thing away from this call, what would you like that to be?
Well, it's a great time to be learning this dance right now because we have so many resources. While it's still a mystery in some way because we don't have actual footage of these weddings and the social dances like in some of the countries, there are so many ways that you can learn and take advantage of all these resources. Get to a nightclub, take a workshop, join the Facebook group, go wandering in YouTube and reach out. And don't be afraid to try it. That's the thing. It's a really fun dance. It is not difficult to do. There's a lot of subtlety to it. And we all have a lot to learn, I would say. But the most important thing about it is to take away, I think, the feeling of fun and remember that when you're performing it, you're kind of representing not performing dancers. I don't know how to explain that, but just remember it's a social dance. And if you have that social context in your mind as you perform it, I think you'll come off with the right kind of feeling. You'll project that kind of energy that they project when they perform it.
I think that's one of the things I like best about this dance is that, you know, especially coming from the place of being a very serious oriental dancer trying to work on technique and this and that, it's just really freeing to do a dance that's beautiful and is closely related to music, where the whole point is to just have fun.
Right, exactly.
It's presenting this perfect spectacle. You do it and you have fun and you interact with people. And it's like besides all the ways that it's lovely in itself, that piece just feels so nice.
Oh, great. I agree. I think it's one of the, it is a lot of fun to do. And I always try and bring that, that's what I hope to bring to my workshops and classes is that feeling of fun and exploring what it's like, you know, to dance that way and to think about, yeah, that interaction. And if you can get that on the stage, that's the best. To not only have everyone dancing, you know, somehow get that pair dancing feel or the interaction between the dancers onto the stage. Everyone loves that.
So what are you working on these days, Kay?
Like I think I mentioned before, I'm writing an article on the thobe nutshell, the actual Hawiji thobe for Aramco World, that I'm working with this fantastic illustrator, Leela Corman, who's a dancer, but she's also she's an illustrator, and she loves Hawiji dance. So it's just kind of a match made in heaven, and hopefully it will be out sometime next year, and I will alert the media. It's really, really exciting to be doing that. And also hoping to get my novel out into the world in the next year, and that's set in Saudi Arabia, about a couple of Saudi women, and preparing now for the Arab Dev Seminar, which takes place in early November. And I'm also thinking about maybe doing some kind of workshop, maybe in Portland or Boston this winter. We'll see. If there's interest, I'll probably do that. But if anyone's interested in the workshop, please just get in touch via my website.
Yep, and that's khardycampbell.com?
Right.
Great. And if folks would like to learn more from you, do you travel?
Sure, I could travel, absolutely. Yep, I'm happy to do it. Feel like I'm, you know,
if
people...
want to come to you, is that an option?
Yes, certainly. I do teach privately, although I recently moved up to Maine and I'm out in the country, so I'm not in Boston area anymore. So if anyone's on the line...
All right. Sorry for the interruption, everybody. What I was saying is that I imagine the leaves are still pretty nice up where you are, so maybe it would be a nice, you know, just weekend trip, go see some pretty things in Maine and have a lesson.
Absolutely. I have a studio at home, and I'd be happy to give private lessons and just getting settled into that. But I look forward to doing that and to, you know, exploring. I haven't done Skype lessons yet. Everyone is telling me I should, so I'm welcome. I'm interested in trying that out if someone wants to get in contact. But we'll just get in touch. If you have any ideas, I'd be very interested. And I just can't recommend that Facebook group enough, though. By the way, if I want to mention the name one more time, let me see. It is Dances of the Arabian Peninsula, Iraq, and Southern Iran.
Mm-hmm. Probably. I'll include that in the show notes, too.
Okay, great. It's a super resource.
Wonderful. And you've also got a mailing list, so when you've got stuff coming up, people can be notified, right?
Right. You can join my email list and just email me through my website if you want to be on that list, and I'll let you know when there's something going on.
Great. All right. So before we open up to questions and answers, is there anything else you'd like to tell us, Kay?
I just thank you so much for inviting me. It was
marvelous.
And, just looking forward to hearing if there are any questions.
All right. So, folks, if you'd like to ask a question, if you're listening on the webcast, you can type in your questions using that little question bubble on the right-hand side. Or if you're calling in by phone or Skype, you can press ** to unmute yourself. If you are on Skype, that's ** on your Skype keypad, not necessarily on your keyboard. So I would love to hear if anybody has any questions, or if not, if you just want to share your favorite tidbit that you learned or the thing that you're most excited about trying at this point, we would love to hear that too.
Hi, this is Hava.
Hi, Hava.
Hi, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For your presentation. I'm not clear about something you said about women don't perform publicly, and so your teaching fills the gap. I'm not clear because the YouTube that you're showing has women performing publicly. So could you explain that again?
Right. Those are high school. Okay. What I mean by that is you've got high school girls performing. They're performing in a very specific sort of regulated, institutionalized, and socially acceptable format. Yes, those are the places you will see the women performing. And you'll see some performances like the mother and daughter pair in the two clips. Those are older, from decades ago. You will see a few old clips like that. You won't see modern clips of women doing pair dancing anymore like that. This is just not done. It's not considered proper. But you will see, like in Kuwait, and the young girls doing the specific folk dance, you will see those. This is what we can see. We cannot see the actual social dance of women at weddings. They're not going to be, that is just taboo from the whole region. You don't see it for the Emirates, Qatar, anywhere. You know, someday I think that will be seen. But yes, we do see these choreographed dances. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
That is true.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that.
Yes, good point. Thank you for catching me on that.
All right, thanks, Hava. Do you have any more questions while you're unmuted?
Am I unmuted still?
You are.
Yeah,
yeah.
What else? Oh, any
okay.
other questions?
What does the when women put their index finger on their noses? Do you know what that's what is? What is that?
I don't believe there is any meaning to it, and I take issue with those folks who make up theories that for a particular, you know, cultural meaning.
Uh-huh.
My guess is it may have to do with the fact that the girls who are flipping their hair around, their hair is so incredibly long and it's heavy. So if anything, I think it may be just to hold their head steady so they don't hurt their neck. That's all. I don't, those, I've heard many, many theories and they're quite interesting, but obviously unsubstantiated. One thing I wanted to say is there are no academies for learning these dances over there. The girls learn them a little bit in the schools and they learn them at home. And then if you're, you know, obviously if your family's living in the desert and you're Bedouin 50, 60 years ago, you learn the dances from the women in your tribe. So you would learn those movements. I doubt anyone has a theory, had a theory about them. They just do it.
Okay.
Good question, though.
I won't ask the question about head tossing.
The
I'm
same
joking
question?
Because you said it was a pet peeve of yours.
Yes, it's the pet peeve. So people always seem to have to attribute a meaning to that movement. And I don't believe it has a meaning. It is just, it's done in so many contexts. It's not only done in the Arabian Gulf, it's done in Egyptian dance, it's done in North Africa among the Sheikhat of Morocco. They're famous for their hair movements as well as Iraq. But for some reason in the Gulf, when people see the Khaliji, they want to come up with a theory. I've heard this one about, you know, it has something to do with the waves of the Gulf. I find that rather strange because it's done by the Bedouin in the middle of the desert who have never seen the ocean. So I don't agree with that theory, and you know, I no one needs to have a theory of the head slide. So why do we need one about the hair toss? So I don't espouse any of those theories. I just, you know, I don't understand. I guess I kind of, it's strange to me that everyone needs to have a theory or understand or needs to know why people toss their hair in Gulf dance, particularly.
Huh.
You never hear them ask about Iraqi or Moroccan or the Tsar. So anyway, so I don't know what, all what I just tell people is I don't know why they do it. And I don't believe there's a particular like spiritual or religious or cultural reason for it. It's just a dance movement that is done. And it may be very old. In fact, the fact that it's across the Arab world maybe shows that it's one of the older dance moves of Arab culture that we've just lost tracks with why and how it started, you know, way back. It's a fascinating movement, though.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up. My grandmother and my her sisters did that. They were from Morocco, and for me, it was just that's how you do how you move when you're engrossed with the music.
Right. So you didn't need a theory. You just saw them doing it. You know, I wish we could go back in time and find out why, how it all started, that particular movement. You know, what was it that started people doing it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing I like to say all the time is that dance movements have, they don't follow political boundaries. We make up the political boundaries, but art moves on its own. And that, you know, a lot of the Khaliji dance moves are found in southern Iraq, in parts of Jordan and Syria, and they don't stop at the border. And over time, I think that that's true with all kinds of these movements. Who knows how far they've traveled and where they came from?
Mm-hmm.
Good question. So your ancestors are from Morocco?
My grandmother was from Morocco, my great aunts.
Wow. So did you learn the dances you learned from them?
Well, I did, but I was not, it's a long story, but I was not allowed to do them in my own home. It was forbidden, so.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, so I'm just now as an adult trying to reclaim that
heritage. I love it. Well, best of luck. That's a great project.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for your presentation.
Thanks very much for your questions.
Great. So if you think of anything else you'd like to ask, feel free to unmute yourself again, but I'm going to put you on mute again for the moment. If anybody else would like to ask a question or share their favorite learning, go ahead and press ** to unmute yourself. I also wanted to mention that in the webcast, Sandra earlier on asked how to spell THOBE. And just in case anybody else missed it, I think it's usually spelled THOBE. Kay, have you ever seen any other spellings?
Yes, there's the real classical Arabic way to do it is THAWB, THAUB. That's kind of the snobby pronunciation, but most people say THOBE now. And it is the same word. The word THOBE actually means, you know, dress. And that's the name of the white, long white shirt that men of the region wear. They call that THOBE as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a lady's THOBE.
Gotcha.
And, by the way, it has different names. I've learned so much writing this article. I don't want to spill the beans right now, but if you get your free Aramco World subscription, by the way, go to aramcoworld.com. You can get a free subscription. You will learn that there are many, many different varieties of thobes that women dance in. One thing I'll tell you is that in Iraq, they call it the hashmi, and it's in Kuwait, the cut is different. Like some of these videos, if you look at the thobes, some of them have very low necklines, like they have a big V or a circular yoke design. That's very common of Iraq and Kuwait. But more on that in the article. I don't want to give it all away.
Sure. All right. So one more time, if you want to ask a question or share your learning, you can press ** to unmute yourself. We would love to hear from you.
I'd be interested if anyone on the call is, you know, doing a Khaliji number with their group or is studying it right now or working on a choreography right now. Doesn't sound like it. Oops, too bad. Well, if you have any questions about it ever doing that, get in touch.
Yep. All right. So last call for questions. And just while we're waiting, let me just say thank you, Kay. This has been so great and so informative, and you've provided us with so many resources.
Oh, thank you. You're very kind. I really enjoyed it, and it's always great to work with you. I've had you had me for a workshop last December, which was great fun, and you've taken my classes, and I really appreciate your support, and love this event. I wish you luck with it, and I think it's a great resource to the community. I hope more people take advantage of it. Thank you for asking me to participate, and I hope to see you sometime.
My pleasure. I'm sure I'll see you soon.
I hope so.
I also want to say special thanks to our sponsor one more time. That's Susan Hugert. Be sure to check out An Evening of Music and Dance featuring dancer Tiffany Adia and vintage belly dance rock band Ishtar. So if you'd like to join them on Saturday, November 14th in Charleston, West Virginia, visit SusanHugertHipCurve.com. One more time, that's SusanHugertHipCurve.com. Or go ahead and back to the show notes because it's linked there too. I also want to tell you about something that's going on in the belly dance geek world. On October 9th, we're starting an online course called How to Build a Sustainable Dance Practice. How to Build a Sustainable Practice Habit. This is a 9-week online course designed to help you stop feast or famine practice and instead to build a long-term sustainable dance practice. We ran this back in January, and it went so well that I'm doing it again this fall. So if you'd like to check it out, you can go to bellydancegeek.com/practice-habit. So that's practice-habit. And thank you everybody for coming, and especially for the great questions. This is the end of our call, but that doesn't mean that the conversation has to end. We've got a private Facebook group just for Clubhouse members, so you can keep discussing what you've learned, share some resources, and I'll send out an email shortly that I'll have a link to an invitation. It is a private group, so I do have to approve you before we get in, just to make sure that it's only dancers in there. So just click on the request to join button, and then I'll approve you within a day or two. The email that I send out will also include a link to the recording, so if you want to go back and listen, you can hear all of this again, as well as a link to the resources that Kay mentioned on the call. I'll also have a link to our feedback survey. I run the Clubhouse, but this is for all of us, so I'd really like to hear what topics or speakers you'd like to hear from or any ways that I can improve this call. Our next call date for October is still TBD, so keep an eye on your inbox, and I'll announce that pretty soon. And the last thing that I want to say is that this is the come on in kind of Clubhouse, not the no boys allowed kind. So if you know somebody who would enjoy these calls, you can invite them to join us at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And until next time, happy dancing. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you, Nadira.
My pleasure.
Take care now. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. For more geektacular resources, check out bellydancegeek.com.